Oregon income tax laws are creating a situation whereby even some of the more simple returns may run afoul of the prolific number of rules and regulations imposed by the governmental agencies to collect more and more taxes. And, of course, this becomes more important since the Oregon has chosen to disconnect from the federal law, which was voted in by the people in 1969. In the future, many more returns will be prepared by licensed tax consultants and preparers who are striving even now to keep abreast of the increasing volume of tax law legislation being rained upon us all, and almost on a daily basis. And even the Internal Revenue Services responded by asking Congress if they couldn't stop a while and let them assimilate what they've already got. The Internal Revenue Service has also attempted to evaluate the performance of tax preparers in Oregon. A study prepared under the supervision of the Internal Revenue Service and submitted to the Oregon Sunset Review Committee on October 12th of last year reveals that all of the third-party prepared returns, those prepared by Oregon practitioners, averaged an accuracy rate of 97.2500%. Those prepared by taxpayers achieved an accuracy rate of only 85%. In addition to these statistics, Mr. Jerry Huntley, field representative for our board, is furnished with a list of assessments made against Oregon tax practitioners by the Internal Revenue Service under the provisions of the Preparers Penalty Act of 1976. Mr. Huntley receives a copy similar to that received by the tax practitioner noting that particular assessment. Mr. Huntley has informed the members of the board that roughly 90% of the penalties assessed against Oregon licensed tax practitioners are for failure to sign the returns or place their federal identification number on the return. 10% or less of the penalties assessed fall into the category of intentional disregard of the rules and regulations. And, of course, this comes from adequate knowledge and education in the field. There are just a few of the yardsticks that have been used in determining the effectiveness of the rules of the conduct and regulations of practice implemented by the Board of Tax Service Examiners. In fact, the Tax Service Examiners Law has proven to be effective enough in practice within the state of Oregon to cause the state of California, who did recently rescind their old law, to reestablish it with an educational background. Currently, the state of Washington, that legislature is considering a similar law. The board has concerned itself throughout its existence with a matter of consumer awareness of the activities of the board, its licensees, and the ability of the board to function in behalf of the taxpayer. During the past 10 years, publicity has been disseminated to the people through news releases, to the media, by direct contract with the two state associations, and through the board's own publications. It is unfortunate, however, that the board has twice applied for funds in its biennial budget to the Oregon legislature that would promote in-depth promotion, but the times have not permitted that. Of course, the best contact is those 4,000 licensees who meet their own customers. The biennial budget for the operation of the board is nominal, reasonable, and administered with the frugality generally reserved for a family budget. Good thing I'm on a diet when we go to these board meetings now. The overall expenditure limitation of the Board of Tax Service Examiners for the biennium of 1983-85, as recommended by the Ways and Means Committee, is $368,363, all of which will be funded from the fees received from the examinees and licensees. Significantly, Oregon tax preparers are individuals who have been educated, trained, and disciplined in the preparation of personal income tax laws promulgated by both the federal government and the state of Oregon, particularly since Oregon has disengaged from the federal tax code. All licensees are required to attain a minimum of 20 hours of continuing education each year to enable them to retain their licenses. We've been toying with the idea of increasing that because of the complexity of the law. The majority of these licensees continually submit educational certificates, generally far exceeding the minimum requirements. I believe you've been outlined the elements of the law and those changes that are being made by our previous speaker. And significantly, there has been proposed an increase in the number of board members from 5 to 7 members, one of which would be a layperson. And the board members would be appointed by the governor rather than the director of the Department of Commerce. Some conversation was given to expanding the areas of coverage of the board as far as the type of return to be prepared. As we said earlier, most everything is covered now except for corporation returns. As a representative of the Board of Tax Service Examiners, I've been instructed to respectfully petition this committee for its approval to continue this board and allow it to serve the Oregon public by having passed into law House Bill 2093, as it has been presented to you for enactment and with the amendments which have been approved by the board. Thank you very much.
I just want to make sure. No. The board then is happy with this bill as the House has amended it.
Yes.
Are the tax examiner, are the CPAs, you took out the part that that you didn't like, said something about estate planning or some kind of planning, on the tax planning. You've taken that part out, didn't you?
That's section four.
Section four.
Yes.
Wasn't that the part you disagreed with? Are both of your associations now in agreement with this bill?
Madam Chairman, Senator Ripper, I believe that there has been concurrence on the part of the two associations. There's been no adverse comment from either one.
I'm just trying to find out if it's, you know, if they took care of everything over in the House side, that everybody's happy now.
I think they did it up pretty well.
Okay, and they're all willing to accept it.
Mm-hmm.
I suppose we'll hear if there's any opposition, but I'm just, I just wondered if you, now that the board is ready, you don't mind the public person being on there and all those other things. So.
We would welcome the help.
Okay, so you're willing to accept it now. That's all I want to know.
Mr. Hoyer,
yeah.
Generally there's a trend to have two public members on the board. Do you think it's a good idea for this board to have two public members?
Madam Chairperson, it is my opinion, this will be my opinion, that the type of board that we have here would not be conducive to two members of a lay capacity. In fact, the chairman and myself met with the deputy director today of the Department of Commerce, and that discussion was held. And it was felt that a lay person could add leavening to the board by expressing opinion outside the expertise of the members in the area of tax knowledge. But as far as being able to serve the board in many of the capacities, no, because they could not help prepare the examinations. While the suggestion was made, we could hire them as a typist. But it is my opinion that in this type of field, if the Congress is going to change the tax law every year, you're going to have people who are trained in the field who will be able to serve on the board adequately.
Are there many cases of failure to pay the civil penalties?
Eleanor, you have a figure on that?
Madam Chairperson, my name is Eleanor Blundell. I'm the administrator for the board. I don't have those figures with me, but I would say that they are not all paid. As a practice, we do have trouble getting payment of the civil penalties.
Can you give us an idea how many cases are not paying the civil penalties?
Just off the top of my head, I would say about half of them are paid and about half of them are not. We have the authority to file a lien on their property if the civil penalty is not paid within 60 days. And we do that. And we also turn it over to the Department of Revenue, to their collections division. And there are some situations where we have collected from the Department of Revenue and in cases where they sell their property.
Do you do it with every case that fails to pay the civil penalty?
If the person does own property, we file a lien.
What is your experience regarding out-of-state tax preparers coming to Oregon who are not knowledgeable about Oregon tax laws?
Madam Chairman, I don't think I understand your question.
Mm-hmm. What is your experience with out-of-state tax preparers who come to Oregon and who are not knowledgeable with Oregon tax laws?
Madam Chairman, the people that come from out-of-state are required to take our examination. And if they don't pass our examination, then they're not able to prepare tax returns.
Mm-hmm. So they have to pass an examination on their knowledge.
Right.
Now, do you have a copy of this fiscal impact analysis prepared by legislative fiscal analyst? Do you have a copy of it?
No, I do not, Madam Chairperson.
You want to give me a copy? Because this shows that your expenditures exceed your revenue. And I just want to know whether you are aware of this or not. See, your expenditures for 83-85 shows a total of $192,371. And your revenue is $166,196. And what are you going to do with the shortage?
Madam Chairman, we have a carryover of a considerable amount of funds that will take care of this.
What is your carryover?
I hesitate to give that to you off the top of my head, but it is sufficient, and I'd be glad to supply that to you.
Yes. I hate to see you, of all boards, to spend more than what you
receive.
Madam Chairman, as a way of explaining that for Ways and Means, Ways and Means, no matter how much they collect, and if they overcollect, they can't spend it unless the legislature, through Ways and Means, but you, when you vote on the budget, okay the spending level. They could have $500,000 in the bank, and they can't spend a penny of it unless you okay it when you vote on the budget, and that's all they can spend. So if she had a cash carryover, they might have said, you know, you don't need any increase in dues this time or in fees because you're carrying much money. So rather than increase fees, you use the money you have, and then when you get down to zero, then we increase the fees.
Because it didn't show your carryover. It just shows that you're spending about quite a bit more than your revenue. That's why I want to ask you how you're going to balance it. But as long as you have a carryover, I suppose you can take care of it without us dipping into the general fund.
If I may comment, Madam Chairperson, we've always requested that right now the fines and penalties go into the general fund. We've requested that we have those for use for the purpose that you have outlined, but essentially they've been retained for the general fund, but that would be one out. But the other one would be, of course, raising the annual license fees, which everyone is reluctant to do.
Or reduce your spending.
Well, like I said, I think we're pretty well controlled the spending. It's the problem really lies in the fact we're administering 3,000 more licensees really than we had begun, or 2,000 if you want to be exact. But we do have an increase in number of licensees administered. Of course, increasing of funds, inflation, all those things that we fall back on as hedges.
And then, what are you going to do with your reserve fund that you want to set as a credit for your the money you collect from civil penalties? You want to set up a reserve fund?
Madam Chairperson, that money would go into the board's revenue along with their examination fees and their license fees to cover the expenses of our investigative, our hearings, our AG's expenses.
Any other questions? If not, thank you.
Before I leave, Madam Chairperson, may I have one comment? The question was asked about the matter of education and licensees, and I think I'd like to amplify one point I don't think has been made clear. On the examinations, some 70% of our questions concern federal law, and about 25% of it concerns Oregon law. And one of the reasons for bringing in the enrolled agents who are already licensed from the federal level to our examination structure is because they are not acquainted generally with Oregon law. And this assures the taxpayer that when a person is taking the state examination, he's getting that examined on the Oregon level, which becomes more important now that the state of Oregon has disconnected from the federal. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Ralph Short. Mr. Short.
My name is Ralph Short. I am appearing as the registered lobbyist for the Tax Practitioner Political Action Committee, which was formed in late 1982 to support the continuation of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners and the licensing of tax consultants and return preparers. I am a retired federal employee. When I retired in January 1981, I had served the federal government for 40 years, 35 of which were with the Internal Revenue Service. Since August 1971 until my retirement, I was district director for the Portland District of the Internal Revenue Service, which covers the state of Oregon. Relatively early in my tenure as district director, I was contacted by representatives of a tax practitioner group requesting the assistance of the Internal Revenue Service in designing a training program to enhance the skills of the individual members in the preparation of tax returns for their clients. I was very much impressed with the attitudes of these people and their desire to improve their ability to serve the public, since their objective appeared to support the IRS desire to decrease errors in returns filed. I assigned personnel to work with the group to design a training program. I treated them the same way I treated the CPAs. Subsequently, I agreed to furnish instructors for the training, which, as I recall, was of 3 days' duration and took place in space rented by the group at the Coliseum in Portland. The group that I dealt with emerged as the Association of Tax Consultants. That organization actively supported proposed legislation to require the licensing of tax consultants and return preparers who provided services to the public for pay. That bill provided that a written test must be passed prior to the granting of a license. It also provided for an annual continuing education requirement in order for a licensee to retain his license. The law was to be administered by a board which would also investigate complaints against licensees and which would have the authority to mete out appropriate penalties after the violations had been verified. That bill was passed in the fall of 1973 with an effective date of January 1, 1974. Until I retired, I received copies of the minutes of the meetings of the Board of Tax Service Examiners and maintained liaison with the administrator. The minutes of the board set forth summary accounts of investigations made by the field investigator and the actions taken by the board in each case. I was very much impressed by the obvious determination of the Board of Tax Service Examiners to enforce the requirements of the law relative to the behavior of licensees. Reprimands, suspensions, and revocations of licenses, as well as civil penalties, faced licensees who were careless with their responsibilities. In cases of minor infractions, appropriate warnings were given. The board developed appropriate examinations with assistance from qualified sources, including the State Department of Revenue and a professor of accounting from Portland State University. I have been personally acquainted with many of the members of the board, and I was impressed with their integrity and their determination to administer the law fairly and in an even-handed manner. The continuing education requirement is carefully administered by the board. Initially, the board sponsored appropriate seminars to ensure the availability of an adequate number of training courses of proper content and quality. Now there are a number of approved seminars with excellent instructors, including recently the chairman of the accounting department of Portland State University, certified public accountants, and some top-flight revenue agents. What does it cost to administer the licensing law? What is the cost the citizens of Oregon to have a State Board of Tax Service Examiners prepare and administer examinations, conduct field investigations of complaints, issue licenses, approve content of continuing education seminars, hold hearings, and determine the penalties to be imposed for violations that were found to have occurred. The revenues produced by the operations of the board arise from the issuance of licenses, examination fees, civil penalties, and miscellaneous items. To date, the revenues produced, according to the board's report covering operations through June 1982, have exceeded its expenditures for each biennium of the board's existence by from $15,000 to more than $50,000. Thus, this assurance by the Board of Tax Consultant and Tax Return and Tax Preparer competence, as well as their integrity and ethics, has not cost the taxpayers of Oregon anything to date. Why does Oregon need a licensing law if no other state has one? California had a registration law. There was no examination. There was no continuing education requirement. The practitioner merely paid the annual registration fee and received the license. That law didn't do the job. Funding for that law was stopped in 1981, and the law was repealed outright in 1982. Now California has tried again. The new law, as I understand it, is still a registration rather than a licensing law. It became effective February 1st, 1983. No examination is required to obtain the license, but there are continuing education requirements, and penalties are spelled out for specific violations. Maybe this time their law will work. I am told that the state of Washington is considering a bill at the present time, and that people from Washington have visited the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners to learn how it operates. Thus, Oregon is recognized as having a licensing law with teeth in it that has been successfully administered for more than 9 years. I say other states would do well to follow our example. When citizens have complaints against attorneys, they can register their complaints with the state bar. When there is a complaint against a CPA or a public accountant, it is dealt with by the State Board of Accountancy. If there are complaints about the work of tax consultants, the Board of Tax Service Examiners now has the responsibility for handling them. Before 1974, there was no place for the citizen to take his complaint. Are we going to revert to that situation in 1984? I hope not. If we have state boards for licensing barbers and hairdressers, farm labor and tree planters, TV and radio repairmen, hearing aid dealers and massage technicians, isn't it reasonable to continue the licensing and control of the sensitive work of preparing income tax returns? I firmly believe that taxpayers who need help to prepare their tax returns should have assurance that the help they pay for is competent, honest, and fair. Your Board of Tax Service Examiners has performed this function in a highly satisfactory manner for the past 9 years. I strongly recommend that you support House Bill 2093 to continue the work of the Oregon State Board of Tax Service Examiners. I have available for your inspection a number of letters which the Tax Practitioners Political Action Committee has received from citizens of Oregon who feel the licensing law should be continued. I shall be pleased to answer whatever questions you may have. I appreciate the opportunity to appear.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Short? Thank you, Mr. Short.
Thank you.
We have one more witness. That is Mr. Ray Cass. Mm-hmm. Mr. Ray Cass from Albany. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Cass, and will you identify yourself for the record, please?
Madam Chairman and members of the committee, I am Raymond Cass. I'm chairman of the Oregon Association of Public Accountants Legislative Committee. We have no opposition to the bill as it is presented to you this time. Okay, so,
are there any questions? Mr. Cass, do you believe that we should have two public members on the board instead of one, as suggested in the bill?
I have not, we have not discussed that, but I do feel that with the workload the board is required to do, that probably one public member would be sufficient, because the person should be knowledgeable in the amount of work. The board is required to do many hours of work, that it would be a help to them with the one public member and the other not a lay person, but a member in the field.
Are there any other questions? If not, thank you very much. Thank you for taking the time to come and make your presentation.
Mr. Chairman, do you want to put this off today? There's no opposition.
No opposition.
That's up to you. Just what you do, I'll vote it out and get it out of your hair, or you can...
This is a House bill.
It's all right.
It's all right. Okay, I'll accept your motion.
You accept the motion.
Mm-hmm.
I move then that we send House Bill 293 as amended, well, as the House version, which is the amended version, to the Florida Senate for the due pass recommendation.
Senator Ripper moves to send House Bill 2093 as amended by the House to the floor with due pass recommendation. Any further discussions? If there's no further discussions.
There's one right down there in the end. That's the one they're talking about, Madam Chairperson.
Go ahead.
Are there any further discussions?
I'm already.
All those in favor, please say aye. All those opposed, say no. The committee assistant will call the roll.
Senator Hannon?
Aye.
Howe?
Aye.
Ripper?
Aye.
Thorne? Tim?
Aye.
Madam Chairman?
Aye. Motion is carried. Do we have a volunteer to carry this bill?
Marshall, write it up.
Senator Ripper said he carried it.
I've gone through this all during the interim and the other part, too.
Senator Ripper volunteers to carry the bill.
I didn't volunteer. I just said I'd heard it many times.
Yes, you volunteered.
You have to write it up, though. You heard me say that.
Do we have any other matters to come in front of the committee? If not, meeting's adjourned.